It's time for the First Take Vegas Take, brought to you by the Golden Nugget Las Vegas.
What was Stephen A. screaming about this morning? We'll find out here inside of 3 minutes. It's Cofield on the road. Ryan McKinnell, Adam Candy, Ari Manning, things in our Finley Toyota studios. McKinnell, last thing on the Utah State promotion of Bean Burrito Night.
Yeah.
Because they have a guy named Justin Bean and another guy named Diogo Burrito. It was turned down by the NCAA, and I was making the point that schools, especially in the group of five, are going to need creative ways to make up revenue. What do you guys think of this one? Boise State was, because you and UNLV's playing Boise State tomorrow night. Boise State was offered a 9 o'clock local slot on ESPNU for this game. They turned it down. They turned it down because Leon Rice thinks it's too late. He won't have a big fan base or big fan number show up, so they passed on it. What do you think of that?
Was it Idaho or Utah?
This is Idaho.
No,
this is
I know. I was, yeah, no, I was making a conservative joke. I don't know what you say to that. I think the national exposure is infinitely more important than the way a potentially sparse crowd would look on television. I would go ESPN with that. Candy, I don't. Is there something else that I'm missing?
Leon Rice's attitude, Brian, kind of mirrors that of the Mountain West Conference. Mm-hmm. I mean, exactly. This is the way that the Mountain West has approached its TV deals for the last couple of times. They have valued having more control over exposure, and it's shown. I mean, you look at the deals they have.
And it's paid off with the AAC blowing past the Mountain West. Because the AAC respects television.
That it does, and ESPN used to, it doesn't take long for any of us to remember the old days of Big Monday and the Mountain West having the 9 p.m. slot on Monday nights and that reliable game where you were going to get a big set of eyes on it just because you were following a Big 12 game and the East Coast might just stick with you and find out a little bit about a team that they didn't know about otherwise.
Amazing. And the sad part is, last year, it actually was a late start on TV, and last year there were probably 1,500 people in what was Taco Bell Arena. The arena holds about a little over 10. I'm serious, there were about 1,500 people. Based on the attendance this year at Boise games, my guess is that they'll have less than 5. So they passed on TV to have 4,500 in the building. Tomorrow I might find out I'm wrong. And the 7 o'clock start might bring out, 8,000 people for this game against UNLV, but I doubt it. All right, this is what happened this morning on First Take, a hot topic of the day. We've got some good guest spots to talk about this and all these coaching hirings and also the rest of the story in the NFL with the divisional round coming up. We're going to talk to Eric Davis, former NFL player, here in about 25 minutes. But hot topic of the day is the fact that coaches are being hired in the National Football League. It doesn't seem like African-Americans are getting a chance to get gigs or, hell, even interview. And Stephen A. this morning on First Take was not too thrilled.
I want to announce on national television that I personally am going to take it upon myself, whether it's to communicate with the NFL League office, whether it's to communicate with owners, whether it's to sit up here and raise holy hell, whether it's to recruit my contemporaries in this business to address it. We got a problem.
God, that's awesome.
We got him.
Do we have a problem, guys?
Well, we got a problem. The numbers speak for themselves. 32 teams, 1 black GM, 3 black head coaches. I don't know what more you need to say.
Hey, you forgot to mention the most important part. How about black ownership?
There you go. That directly coincides, right? I believe, with the 1 black GM, because the owners are hiring the GMs, and there's 1 black GM.
Here's more Stephen A. melting down.
Now, the National Football League or somebody else, we got to change this Rooney Rule. It's bogus, clearly, because it's being bypassed. The original intent, what it was intended to produce, is being circumvented. And black men in the National Football League are being ostracized from key positions in the National Football League. Somebody needs to say it. The NFL, league owners, the world of sports, sports talk television, sports radio, y'all are going to be hearing from me. Something got to be done.
Get it, Stephen A.
It was a good rant.
It was. Unless, and he goes back, you know, let's remember, about a month ago, Stephen A. entered him, well, didn't enter himself. I mean, he's Stephen A., so he's always going to be in the mix, right? But the whole Kaepernick situation, and he took a lot of heat from the black community, for some from the black community, for being involved in that and potentially being viewed as being used as kind of like a figurehead. Well, I don't know the word that I'm looking for, but used as a pawn, essentially. And he defended himself, and that was the whole thing, right? Point being is, this is another stark reminder that no matter where you sit on the Stephen A. fence, he is unapologetically 100% pro-black, and he's not afraid to use his voice. And the media needs that because, I mean, he offers a different perspective. And in a league where you just talked about ownership, right, lack of black ownership, one black GM, three black head coaches, that voice is needed more than ever. And Stephen A. Smith, it's a powerful voice, one of the most powerful voices in sports media, and you got to give him credit because he doesn't hold back. And you know what, Steve, and I know I'm getting a little long here, but a lot of the times I feel like when we hear from Stephen A., some of it, is posturing, right? It's a little bit pumped up. It's a little bit being a little bit hyperbolic and a little bit animated. When he talks about issues like
this... I know,
this,
doesn't he yells way too much, doesn't he?
Sometimes. I get what you're doing there, Steve. Be quiet. But I'm being serious. With this, though, it feels real, right? It feels authentic. And I like that coming from Stephen A. And back to the original point, which is essentially him calling the Rooney Rule a joke. Candy, is there any question that the Rooney Rule is a joke?
The problem I have at this point is that when I saw the list of head coaching candidates for the New York Giants job, I read through the list of six candidates and said, oh, Eric Bieniemy, they brought him in for the Rooney Rule, and then moved on from there.
Right.
So I'm not here to call it a joke. I'm here to say the idea behind that rule made a lot of sense at the time. But if we don't evolve and if we don't say, is it working, and look at what the next iteration needs to be, then we're not doing anything other than having a bunch of words on a page that people feel like they need to check a box with.
Yeah, you're not saying it's a joke, but your brain automatically defaults to this is a joke.
I don't know. There's something with Stephen A. that I'm still uneasy with, going back to the Kaepernick workout.
Yeah.
I didn't get his take on that whole thing. Why he couldn't see that Kaepernick shows up in the NFL, throws some stupid waiver in front of him.
Yeah.
And then he's like, no, I'm not doing this. There's no lawyer in the country that would advise me to do this. And Stephen A. completely smashed Kaepernick. And from what we read afterwards, Stephen A. had a stake in that whole thing. By the way, why doesn't owner Jay-Z make sure that the team he owns does the right thing? By the way, again, another by the way, what team does he own? Who is he involved with? Why did anyone take that at face value when that came out like 5 months ago?
Yeah.
That Jay-Z was going to have, quote, significant ownership stake with a team. What team? We still don't know. We still don't know. And for Stephen A., I don't think you can have it both ways.
No, and you know what? If
you're going to side with the league on the cap thing, and then you're going to flip out because the league's not doing the right thing, like, Stephen A., how do you think we go in that direction where, once again, the league is looking to hire people and doesn't seem to be very interested in practicing or delivering interviews with diversity?
Yeah, I guess I'll say this. So you go back to Stephen A. and why he, you didn't understand the way he reacted to the Kaepernick criticism and the way that all played out. I'll just tell you my read, and maybe you feel differently, but it read like to me that he got essentially caught with his hand in the cookie jar. He was a little bit embarrassed, and instead of apologizing or admitting, his kind of role in all this, which essentially was a pawn, he doubled down and he tried to argue his way out of it because he is a master debater. He is great. When he's on the air, he's authoritative, he's convincing, and I think he thought he could argue his way out of that when the facts told a different story. So that's how that read to me. No?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
No. I agree. Couldn't argue his way out of it.
Yep.
So is this kind of a makeup call? I agree with you. I do believe he's being genuine.
Yeah.
But it's weird, his whole approach to the cap thing, and now he's throwing his arms up like, I'm surprised that the Rooney Rule's not working. This is what we were trying to tell you, Stephen A.
Yeah.
Going back to the Kaepernick workout.
Yep. And I think, you know, it's a balancing act with Stephen A, right? Because I think, as you said, this is the reality of Stephen A. This is, like, when you heard that emotion in his voice, that's Stephen A. But he also has expectations to his listeners, and I don't know. That's the thing with Stephen A. I don't know how often he gets to be Stephen A, right? Like, he has so many expectations. He's required to talk about so many different sports. I love it when we get this Stephen A. I guess I'll just end, and I'll just say that.
Okay. on the way back, we're going to get into some more of that quarterback talk. We're talking about Breeze and what the Saints will do. We're going to go through a prediction of the quarterback shuffle in the offseason, and you got to hear what one former NFL player was saying about Taysom Hill.
Make sure to tune in each day at 10 a.m. to ESPN News or the ESPN radio app for First Take, Your Take with Jason Fitz. Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
We got former NFL player Eric Davis coming up in less than 15 minutes. Ryan McKinnell alongside Cofield. So, Ryan, we were just talking about the Saints plan at quarterback. We spoke to one of the Saints insiders who writes for ESPN.com. Can I read you something from a former NFL player, Brady Popinga?
Shoot.
If I'm looking to jumpstart a fan base, I'm willing to go all in on a running quarterback like Lamar Jackson. Taysom Hill would be my guy. He says at Chargers, at Giants, at Bears, at Broncos, at Patriots are all possible destinations. First of all, is the premise correct that the league, often a copycat league, after seeing the success of Lamar Jackson, is now going to thirst for, you know, L-Jack's light and go after a guy like Taysom Hill for big money?
Yeah, the first dual-threat quarterback in the history of the NFL, Lamar Jackson.
First of all, that's not accurate.
No kidding, it's not accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, Warren Moon, Randall Cunningham, Steve Young, I mean, Fran Tarkington. I mean, the list could go Bobby Douglas. Like, how far do you want to go back?
I'm trying to think. I heard someone the other day just going nuts about him. And they're like, we've never seen – No, actually, they were going nuts about Taysom Hill because, obviously, Taysom Hill is playing running back and
yeah.
You know, quarterback and wide receiver, and they're like, we've never seen anyone like him. I'm like, wait, there was a guy who was nicknamed Slash.
Cordell Stewart, played for the Chicago Bears.
Yes. The slashes between all the positions.
Antoine Randall L. I mean, seriously, like, how far down this rabbit hole do you want to go? There's varying levels of dual threats and how good they are. I'm going to tell you this right now. Taysom Hill is closer to, and this is not a knock on Antoine Randall L. He's closer to Antoine Randall L. than he is Lamar Jackson. Like, I mean, from what we've seen thus far, I mean, Taysom Hill is wildly entertaining. He's a blast to watch. He makes the game unpredictable, and it's fun. We like that. But build your franchise around him? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? To make him your number one, every franchise is worth $1 billion. So in a billion-dollar franchise, wherever that franchise may be, you're going to make Taysom Hill the face of that? That would be reactionary. That would be copycat on a level that we haven't even seen yet. I do believe, yes, that the NFL is cyclical. I do believe, I'd say Derrick Henry, and you look at the top teams that are still left in the playoffs and their ability to run the ball, I would say running the ball could see a resurgence. I could see a resurgence put back and a premium put back on the running back position because of certain players this year. But Taysom Hill is not that player that's going to be copying because, again, Lamar Jackson is not the first dual-threat quarterback in the history of the NFL. But, again, credit to Taysom Hill. He is exciting. That's a ridiculous take, though, in my opinion.
I was hoping Candy was going to jump in. Did he bail?
Yeah, Candy bailed. He's got.
He bailed.
He's got a lot of obligations, Steve. He's heading over to the satellite.
He was going back and forth if he was going to stick around or not. All right, quarterback shuffle. This is one predicted quarterback shuffle around the league.
Okay.
So tell me when to stop.
All right.
Drew Brees, Saints. Tom Brady, Patriots. Philip Rivers, Panthers. No stop yet.
No stop. I like all that.
Dak Prescott, Cowboys. What do you mean? What is that?
That depends on money. You say stop. Like, I don't know what he's going to want to get. Dak Prescott at $30 million? Hell no. I'll take Taysom Hill. Thank you very much. Right? So, like,
Now you just got silly.
Well, I'd take Taysom for 10. Hey, Taysom at 10.
As your starting quarterback.
Taysom at 10 or Dak at 30, I'll take Taysom.
I'll take Dak. And I'm not in support of Dak getting $30 million,
no.
But the Cowboys are screwed now on Dak Prescott because of what Jared Goff got, and Dak, for the most part, excelled most of the year. Jerry Jones probably could have got him for cheaper, but he wanted to take the risk. He wanted to roll the dice, and now Dak is in the position of power.
Hell, Steve, I might take Kirk Cousins over Dak Prescott.
Not available.
No, I know.
Not available.
He's locked up with that sweet contract.
He's got one more year at $28 million unless they renegotiate more time on the deal, which I think you won't enjoy. But we'll see how he does the rest of the playoffs. So Drew Brees, Saints, Tom Brady, Patriots, Phillip Rivers to the Panthers. You like Phillip Rivers to the Panthers, huh?
Well, yeah, from the standpoint that they got something that no other team has, and that's Christian McCaffrey. I don't particularly believe that Phillip Rivers is done quite yet. I mean, we're 2 years removed from a really good season for Phillip Rivers. Really a career year and a really good team. I would probably like to see him on a one-year deal return to Los Angeles, but I think that ship is most likely sailed. I think we can all agree with that. So Carolina finds themselves in an interesting position. You can look at, and so much of this depends on the draft, where Tua falls, what picks they have, you know what I mean? But on the surface, yeah, I don't hate the idea of a veteran like Phillip Rivers going into a place like Carolina and managing a really, really potentially explosive offense. It's not something I can entirely hate.
Throw in where Tua falls and if Tua can play.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Well, there's going to be a massive need for another option if Tua is basically a redshirt his rookie year.
Where Phillip Rivers would even be make even more sense for a team that would potentially be thinking about taking Tua. And it does depend on the team, right? So, like, if he falls to the Raiders spot, then I would say, okay, well, you have one more year left with Carr. You have to pay him money that you might not want to pay him, but you can do that. And then you can bring in Tua and plan for him for the future. I think it's very much a situational choice depending on who's picking and who's doing what. But I don't hate the idea, again, of Phillip Rivers in Carolina.
Rivers could be the option in front of Tua in lots of spots.
Yeah.
Including his current spot.
That's a great point.
Weird, right?
Yeah.
Those two guys could be tied together, and it could be the Chargers. It could be maybe a longer shot with the Dolphins. Could be the Panthers. Because you've got a bunch of teams out there that are going to be looking for a quarterback, and you know maybe they're not convinced whoever they take is ready to go right from the get-go.
And also, who takes them, who's looking at Tua, and what type of person do you have in front of him? Like, I think Phillip Rivers would be open to helping. I think Phillip Rivers would be open to grooming that next generation. You know as well as I do, Steve, that's not the case with every quarterback.
Correct. Miami at 5, Chargers at 6, Panthers at 7. All possibilities for Rivers plus Tua.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
That is wild. And it's also wild to see, you know, how it plays out, because that's the way it stands now, but there's deals to be made, there's picks to be made. It's a chaotic offseason with a lot of teams that feel like they're just on the verge. Like, I still think the Chargers are a really good football team. Their defense showed at different points that they are a very good defense, and I think, you know, Melvin Gordon still potentially, and I don't always be part of the team, I still think he's got something, right? The Chicago Bears, I've definitely, you know, railed on them this year. They were a supremely underachieving team, right? And they've got a lot of question marks, but they're in a spot of kind of uncertainty. And what are they going to do with Mitch Trubisky? And how's that going to play out? And who are they going to draft? And who, maybe Teddy Bridgewater? Who are they going to go after? Point being is, these aren't traditionally terrible teams. These are teams that if you go to them, depending on who you are and what scheme they fit, like, you could be in the playoffs, potentially the Super Bowl next year.
Again, one predicted quarterback shuffle in the offseason. Brees to the Saints, Brady to the Patriots, Rivers on the Panthers, Dak Prescott on the Cowboys. The next guy, I think, has the most volatility in terms of what he could get from a contract standpoint. This list predicts Jameis Winston to the Bucs. He stays with the Bucs.
Well?
But someone could come in. I mean, I think Bruce Arians was trying to play the negotiating game about a week ago, and he was talking about Jameis, and his vision issues, and he also said, well, if we could win with Jameis, we can win with lots of guys. Right. But Jameis, all there has to be is one organization who looks at Jameis Winston and goes, all right, we can fix that. That 33 touchdown thing, we like that. The 30 interception thing, we can fix that. He's our franchise guy.
Yeah. Like,
he could be offered freaking $25 million a year by someone on a, you know, on a 4-year deal with a big bonus.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen.
Again, another wild card. You're not wrong.
It's a possibility.
He's primed to make a lot of money because, again, 33, yes, that comes with a 30, but that 33, that, I mean, that just doesn't – that number doesn't come around all that often. And when you look at the top of the league this year, Jameis Winston was right there. So
he's the second all-time leading passing yards dude at his age.
That's wild.
He's on a pace to, I think, set the overall record, believe it or not. That's how many yards he's thrown for, and he's still a young guy. We had Hub Arkish, Chicago-based guy, longtime NFL reporter, Pro Football Weekly. He threw out Jameis as a possibility for the Patriots. How nuts would that be for Patriot fans?
Well,
if they moved on from TB12 and they bring in the guy who just threw 30 interceptions.
would be a bit of an adjustment period. I would say that those tears that we see in the home games for Patriots fans would be a little bit more justified. But, would it not be exciting? And also, the idea, he'd have to get some weapons around him. I mean, no more Mike Evans and whatever the case may be. But the idea of him with Bill Belichick and a guy who presumably, we've only seen him for 20 years with Tom Brady, the greatest player ever, arguably. But it would be interesting to see what type of season Jameis would have with a guy like Belichick and the respect, presumably, that would rub off on Jameis and the way he would play with that sort of confidence of being a Patriot. Honestly, as we're sitting here talking about chaos and anarchy, let's go. Let's go all in. Jameis Winston is a Patriot. I love it.
I hope there's like 8 quarterbacks who are on the move. We'll go through the rest of this list because we didn't get to the Dolphins, the Chargers, or the Titans. We'll get you ready for the playoffs this weekend and also look at the hires to this point. If you missed it, Joe Judge is the new Giants coach. Matt Rhule moves on from Baylor to take over the Carolina Panthers.
Finley Toyota. They'll do anything to sell you a car. No Toyota problem is too tough, too large, or too small. Keep your Toyota running like a Toyota. Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Well, you heard from Stephen A. Smith at the start of the hour with Cofield and Company with our feature every day at 4 o'clock, the first take, Vegas take. He's concerned about the Rooney Rule. He's concerned about the lack of diversity in terms of hires, in terms of interviews. And today we saw Joe Judge, a white, hired by the Giants. Matt Rhule, fellow white, hired by the Panthers. First name out of everyone's mouth beyond that, Josh McDaniels, white. Eric Bieniemy doesn't seem like he's going to get a gig. It's concerning, right, McKinnell?
Of course it is. It's another year where I feel like it's like with the catches. Like, what's pass interference? What's a catch rule? Like, it's been now, it feels like decades we've been talking about this, and it's the same old song and dance, it's the same old story, only in this case, Steve, we're talking about a much more important issue, and that is about diversity in the coaching ranks in the NFL, and not just coaching, we talked about ownership, general managing. It's a mess, and the Rooney Rule's a joke.
So I saw a tweet earlier today from one Willie Anderson, who played in the National Football League, gigantic offensive lineman, and he said, forbidden positions for African-American coaches in college and the pros. Head coach, offensive coordinator, quarterback, even offensive line, said popular positions, running back, wide receiver, and all defensive positions. Is this reality? Because, man, Willie Anderson got it from a lot of people on Twitter. He joins Cofield & Company here on this Tuesday. How you doing, Willie?
I'm doing good, Gareth. How you doing?
Good. I'm good. So explain the original statement and your concerns about what's going on right now, not only in the NFL, but also college football.
Yeah, so thanks for having me on, first of all.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
So actually my tweets got a great response from people, you know, because I think I speak from a lot of perspective of, you know, coaches. I've had coaches DMing me and texting me and all kind of stuff, white and black coaches. And my statement was, the coaching fraternity is a hard position for all. We all know that. There's no secret how you get there. You grind, work your tail off, and hope you get on. But a lot of times, there's a fraternity of friends. Like friends hire friends. And you guys mentioned Eric Bieniemy, and I didn't even think about EB. I mean, EB, I played with Eric Bieniemy as a rookie my first 3 years in the NFL with the Bengals. Great guy, a guy that we all knew would one day be a coach from the running back position. But my initial tweet is something that we laugh about every year. We know that in college, I was mainly talking about college football. In college football, you see running back coaches that are running back coaches for 30 years.
Yeah.
You see guys that are D-line coaches for 20, 30 years. They never move up, and they're getting 247.com and rivals.com coaches of the recruiting coaches of the year, but they never get a chance to even get interviewed in some of these big time college football places. And, you know, with me, I run a offensive line academy out of here in Denver, Atlanta. We travel around the country. We train pros, college and high schools. Several NFL teams have me come in every year doing training camp. But I did a lot more high school kids, and I see it on the college level. I see in major Division I football, if I'm not mistaken, there are only 5 African-American offensive line coaches. And people always ask me on Twitter, like, why would you go into coaching? They ask guys, why would you go into coaching? But a lot of times in young African-American kids they see right now, if I go into the coaching industry, I'd make a great salary. Sure, there are coaches in college football, in the NFL, making great salaries being coaches. But we also know there's a lid. You know, here there's a top as far as how high some guys can go in certain positions. I mean, there are not a lot of African-American offensive coordinators in college football, in pro football. But pro football is only 32 teams, so you kind of understand that. But in college football, there are not many offensive coordinators or African-American quarterback coaches. There was a black coaches convention here in Atlanta back in July. That I found out that Marvin Lewis, my old coach, was at. I think Jim Trotter reported on it on Twitter. And I saw it on Twitter. I said, oh, that was a damn conference here in town I didn't hear about. Now, I'm not a coach. I only do skill and development, offensive line training. I have no desire to ever be a coach. I do want to consult teams and help linemen with skill development. But that conference was about black offensive coordinators and quarterback coaches. And they had guys from colleges and NFL come up, and they said only 2 NFL teams showed up. And one was a black executive that I'm very fond of, have so much respect for. I won't say his name, but I love him to death. And Jim Trotter reported in his report that black executive said, man, I had no idea this many African-American guys even coach quarterbacks. And
man.
Jim Trotter reported that the room took the air out of the room. And said the other executive was, I think, the guy Spielman down at the Dolphins. That's correct?
Right.
I think Spielman was the Dolphins. He reported, he said, man, hey, I have African-American sons. I have an African-American wife. I know one day my sons may be in this position, so we're coming here to help. But you know, only 2 NFL teams showed up. And you had coaches there like Marvin Lewis, Hugh Jackson, all these guys around the league that's been coaches and several other coaches. So that's a big thing about African American at certain positions, and that's how it is, man. I think it hit as coaches too.
That's Willie Anderson, who played in the NFL for 12, 13 years with the Bengals and the Ravens as an Auburn guy. You know, good example, and I'm not sure if you know who this guy is, but and I was kind of shocked when I read his background. There was a dude who was up for the Colorado State head coaching job named Tony Alford. He played at Colorado State. He has been a running back coach at Ohio State and Notre Dame, to your point, for 22 years. He's been at that level coaching running backs, and instead CSU didn't even go with an alum. They went with a guy who's a retread in Steve Adazio from Boston College. But here's the problem, because it's a chicken and the egg thing, because you pointed out in a bunch of your tweets, you were saying, hey, quarterbacks or guys who play the position or coach quarterbacks, they get jobs. Like, they continue to be recycled. But here's the big issue. We had such a shortage of African-Americans getting a chance to play quarterback. how the hell do you fix it when there were no black quarterbacks for like 30 years or, you know, very few?
Now, and okay, so now, I had a comment to say that too. That's a great point. But, yeah, as I said, just because you play professional football doesn't mean you're going to be a great NFL coach or a great college coach. There are several. We all know there are a lot more African-American college quarterbacks than pro guys that made it. And I told guys, the majority of, so the guy said, well, 80% of your NFL quarterback coaches are guys that play the league. I said, that's not true. 80% of the guys are guys who coach, had an opportunity to rise up and coach quarterbacks. Like, owners don't, owners don't know a lot about football. So owners go off, owners are great businessmen, they're billionaires, they know about business. They don't know about football. They'll tell you they do, but they don't. I mean, look at some of them. So owners are being told that, hey, you got to get your quarterback guy because he can read the defenses. Well, I also know guys I'm friends with and coach played for. I know other O-line coaches, white offensive line coaches, who all felt for years that the offensive line position, whether white or black, get overlooked from being offensive coordinators. And if you know football, an offensive line coach do just as much of coordinating the damn game plan as any other position. He coordinates the pass protection schemes, the run blocking scheme, all that. But it's perceived that these quarterback guys know more football. And that's true. They'll all be winning the damn Super Bowl. Like, why? You know?
All right, so Willie, let me ask you something. Willie, and we're here with Willie Anderson, 13-year NFL vet, 5-time Pro Bowler, spent a lot of time with the Bengals. Willie, we're talking about kind of the systemic problem that is kind of blanketed over the NFL right now. Some numbers. There's 32 NFL teams. There's one black GM. There's 3 black head coaches. Now, that is obviously a problem. But I would say the bigger problem is, well, who's hiring that one black GM? That would be the ownership. And though that one black GM, he only has so much power, it only results in 3 head coaches. So I, to me, Willie, it feels like an ownership problem. Ownership clearly is being shut out. There are clearly rich black people that want to buy teams in the NFL. That's not a problem. The problem is actually being able to. So what's the answer? Where does the fix come? And at some point, do the players take action and start making an issue? And I don't want to say like hold out or anything like that, but start to wield their power. What can be done, Willie?
I mean, players that get killed, they even did that. They'll get killed for doing that. But I think it's like, I'm going to go back to my, you know, I'm going to do a small shameless plug here with my lineman academy.
Okay.
My Willie Anderson lineman academy down in Atlanta. So I tell coaches all the time, coaches said, man, how do we fix the offensive line problem in the NFL with these guys having a lack of skills coming out of college, coming in the NFL with now the CBA has a lack of time that O-line coaches can spend with guys? And I say, well, the only way you stop it is you got to start, the only way you help it, you got to help it at the lower levels. Like, until there are more lower-level college coaches that are African-American that have offensive coordinators, they have a chance to be able to do what the guy, what's his name, Matt Rhule for Baylor, is his name? Hello?
Yep, correct.
You're right, Willie. Yeah, my bad, buddy.
So until guys have a chance to get lower-level jobs to be able to move up, owners would never know these guys exist. I mean, owners watch college football, and they see the stuff. They see the Kingsbury's and these guys' names being thrown around as offensive gurus and the guys, the Kirby Smarts and the Muschamps in the years past being called defensive gurus. And, like, damn, like, but their staff is made of African-American coaches who actually went in there and recruuted those kids. You go to the practices, the coaches are doing the one coaching, but those guys never get the credit. So at the high-profile position, are offensive coordinators and quarterback coaches. So until these owners and GMs start seeing these guys at lower levels, you know, even being able to move up, you know, like a Sean McVay did, they'll never know because they don't know. They're not personal people. They're only going by what they see.
Right.
And they should know. Yes, they should know that there are other guys out there. But when you have guys who are stuck at running back coaches and guys always being called the assistant offensive coordinator, and we have to wonder, is he calling the plays? Is he calling the plays or he's calling the plays into the quarterback? There's a difference. There's a difference in the guy who calls the plays and the guy who calls the plays into the quarterback. Both of them have play sheets up to their mouth, but who really used the real power?
Right. Now, we're talking about, like, what's the fix, right? Clearly, there's no easy fix to this. It's not like a one-word answer, but I did bring up maybe the players mobilizing or the players making a statement or coming out and making some sort of stand, right? You said the players would get killed. Now, I kind of do understand where you're coming from that, but Willie, when we talk about the Rooney Rule, normally with these polarizing issues, right, you always have someone that's coming to the defense of the other side, no matter how ridiculous it is. And it is 2020, and we have a lot of ridiculous people defending a lot of ridiculous actions. But with this Rooney Rule, Willie, like, I don't ever hear it. Like, I don't ever hear people coming to the argument of the other side. I feel like almost 99, 98% of the public at large agrees that the Rooney Rule is a joke. There is a lack of representation in the NFL, and it has to change. So, Willie, I feel like the power is on the side of the players. So maybe they wouldn't get killed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you could be right because, you know, at the time in Cincinnati, that media tell you, if the guys who were there when I said it, after the 2002 season that we had just fired Coach Dick LeBeau, they asked me the last day of playoffs, and I said, I wouldn't mind if the guy, the African-American coach up in Washington, be for the coordinator, gets a chance. At the time, that was Marvin, but I had no idea what Marvin's name was. I just said, I knew at Baltimore, he gave us fits. I knew we couldn't block his defenses. His defenses were dynamic, very high intelligent defenses, and they won a damn Super Bowl. I saw him go to Washington Redskins do the same thing. So I couldn't recall his name, but in my outgoing my press conference, I said, "Hey, the guy that was in Baltimore that's now in Washington, he should get a chance." Now, Mike Brown and the Bengals never said publicly that, "Hey, they're really saying that." That meant something. We said that, but you're right. Maybe players should say it because the coaches are in a position where they can't say it because it'll, like, you know, right now we're dealing with a time, man, where everybody cries, you know, racial foul, and some things are racial, a lot of things are not. So I think when it comes to sports, people start saying that, coaches are afraid to say it, and it takes guys like myself. I say it every day because I was helping some kids get recruited. Here in Atlanta, and some friends of mine with a company, my friend's company, Top Notch Opportunities, we do high school recruiting as well. And we was on the phone. I heard college coaches, not college coaches, high school coaches talking about some of their friends maybe getting jobs, and they have to hope this happen. And we're watching guys that we know move up at a rapid pace. And we say this every damn year in January, and I just got tired, and that's where my tweets came from today. But
that was good
stuff. The fix is, you know, hopefully guys will step up and say something.
Yeah.
Yep. Last one, because this was also a part of the conversation you had, and we're talking to Willie Anderson, former offensive lineman in the National Football League. A guy, Quincy Avery, reached out to you, and, you know, he's a coach, and he was saying, you know what, I'd rather not even take an interview if I'm just going to be the Rooney Rule, you know, token or requirement. I'd rather just stay out of traditional coaching. And that's also terrible. You can't just give up. The system is what the system is right now. You got to, if there's a chance to go get interviewed, you got to get in that cycle.
Yeah. So Quincy was actually responding to someone else. Now Quincy's a friend of mine. Quincy trained my son in high school, and my son's in college now. Quincy trained Deshaun Watson. He trained Justin Fields. He trained several quarterbacks, black and white. And Quincy found all these kids before they were known names. He'd been with us since high school. And his dad coached in the NFL. His dad coached 2002 Bucks, receiver coach for the Bucks. So Quincy understands the process. His dad's been a receiver coach in the NFL for a long time. Quincy coached in college a couple times out of UCLA and Colorado, I think. But now he's a skill developer quarterback. He's one of those guys, like, you know, the high-priced NFL quarterback guru guys. But he's a very intelligent guy who knows football, who would never, ever get a chance to even get into the NFL room. Now, he gets invited to NFL training camps, but nothing ever comes out of it. Because why? Quincy don't have any friends in the NFL in powerful positions to say, "Hey, Quincy, I know what you're doing for Deshaun. I know what you're doing." I mean, face it. Quarterback coaches in the NFL didn't make Tom Brady. Don't make Drew Brees. Don't make Aaron Rodgers. Don't make Deshaun Watson. Those guys are just telling those guys plays and give them information. Like, give a quarterback coach in the NFL a football and say, "Hey, man, throw this ball the same way you're saying, telling your kids to throw the ball. They can't do it. They're information guys. So you mean to tell me other guys can't have a chance to give out information to Aaron Rodgers, to Tom Brady, to Drew Brees, to all these great guys? We can't give it, because you're not making these guys. Stop it. No one made those guys. Stop that. Those guys have been getting information and been a system to able to thrive with players around them, and God gives them the ability. No one made Tom Brady. I mean, everybody gave up on him and said he wouldn't even get drafted. You know, you know, so you know, come on, man. So stop that. Yeah. So coaches not doing that. Coaches are benefiting off the Brees, the Brady's, the Aaron Rodgers, the Deshaun Watson. They're benefiting off having these great talents. Yeah, every new coach this year hopes, man, I pray to God I get me a franchise quarterback. They're not saying, I pray to God I get me a franchise quarterback coach. Stop it, man.
I love that. Stop it, man. Hey, Willie, we appreciate a couple minutes. Thanks for popping on with us on short notice. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Willie.
There you go, Willie Anderson, who played at Auburn. Monster dude, like 6'6", 340. Yeah, I mean, it's true. There are certain, especially on the collegiate level, guys are locked into certain positions. And that's awful when I see, you know, in the case of Quincy Avery, he's not coaching in the NFL when he's like, I don't want to be, you know, part of the Rooney Rule requirement. Can I just say one thing, though? Because I hope there's a couple people listening right now who are like, pot calling the kettle black. Where's the diversity at times in sports talk radio, Ryan McKinnell?
Yeah, non-existent. I'll say non-existent.
Could we be more white on ESPN Las Vegas?
No. And we talk about it all the time, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just people of color. It's women as well. So it is that's up to us to talk about it, to acknowledge it, when the opportunity arises for us to do something about it, whether it be choosing whatever the case may be, right? Bringing guests on, whatever the case may be. It's up to the people in power, which I guess we are on some small, minuscule, unimportant level, but on a smaller scale, it is important because it starts on a smaller level. It's kind of like a grassroots movement, right? There has to be a groundswell of change, and it has to start from the citizenry, if I could speak, and the public at large.
Well, because it's not just an NFL problem.
No.
It's a problem across the board, and we have the problem in radio.
Yep.
I would hope our company makes a push to bring in more African-American hosts, more diversity behind the scenes, more women, right?
Yep.
I think this show's been pretty decent at it.
It has.
I can't control who stays around. You know, well, I guess I can. I could not torture them.
Supreme leader, Steve Belfield.
But I do want to mention that, you know, like I'm not sitting here going, NFL, you know, what the hell?
Right.
What's with the lack of diversity? And then you look around our station, you're like, wait, what? Should we be speaking on this? I know what I try to do, and I know who I try to have on the show and have as contributors, but I don't control everything at the station. So, yeah, this is an issue. It's a big issue, folks. And if you are bothered by it, I don't know, maybe look in the mirror. The best people should get the opportunity at jobs. I'm still amazed, and I want to scan through. I haven't been able to see every single person who's interviewed for every single NFL job. Last year there was a guy, Chris Richard, who was hot as a pistol. As a name who was being interviewed, he was on the Cowboys staff, and I've seen almost nothing about Richard this year. So, and he's African American.
Yeah.
Was he just a token a year ago?
Yeah.
I think he's going to be a good head coach down the road, but I don't know what happened. Like all of a sudden now he's not involved. And the other point on this, real quick, you know, let's pay some bills here. We'll finish up the point on the other side with our Iron Gaming. Then we got a good Big Five on the way.
Continue the Cofield and Company conversation on Facebook. Friend us at ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Gambling.
I'm going to kill your bookmaker. I'm going to rip his throat out. I will step on his throat until the man chokes. Let me tell you how. Winners, 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 winners. Free, 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 free.
Ryan McKinnell's back in our Finley Toyota Studios. Cofield on the road here in Boise. We'll continue on the discussion of diversity or lack of diversity in hiring in the NFL and elsewhere. We got the 5 o'clock hour to get to plenty of these issues. And I misspoke earlier. Eric Davis, former NFL player, is going to join us at 5:30. Willie Anderson, another former player, just joined us at 4:30. Good conversation there. We'll have that up at lvsportsnetwork.com right after the show. McKinnell, we ran through this yesterday, but I wanted your take. Global odds on Tom Brady and where he plays week 1, 2020. You ready?
Yeah.
Cleveland Browns, the favorite, plus 550. I don't get that one.
That makes no sense.
Carolina, Las Vegas, L.A., Chargers, all 6-1.
Okay.
Any interest?
I mean, I have interest in the Vegas Raiders.
In terms of betting,
I think probably Los Angeles. It's the most ready-made team to win right now. And if Tom Brady is concerned with winning and sticking it to Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft, then Los Angeles is probably where he's going to end up with a semi-close second, followed by Christian McCaffrey and the Carolina Panthers. So I think there's a good reason why all those teams are sitting at 6-1. Cleveland at 11-2 makes no sense to me. I think someone was drunk when they made that list.
And this bet is all contingent on if he's not.
Sure.
With the Patriots. Long shots that we spotted yesterday. Dolphins 14-1. I actually threw out the Steelers at 25-1, but they'd have to tell Big Ben to buzz off.
Right.
Which I think would be hilarious. any chance the Bears would just turn the page on Trubisky and make a 2-year run with Brady?
I wouldn't hate it. I mean, when you look at the defense, look at what Tom Brady did with that 12-4 Patriots team. Now you give him Allen Robinson and that Chicago Bears defense, and you get to say goodbye to Mitch Trubisky, which I think the worst thing for the Bears this year was getting to 500, masking their record with razor-thin wins against backups of the Minnesota Vikings, against Denver that they shouldn't have won. You know what I mean? Like, they are a bad football team on some level. Right, but you add Tom Brady to that mix, you give him a defense and you give him a couple weapons. I wouldn't hate the idea of the chance to work his magic. The problem is if you're Chicago and you make that decision, you stave off what I think should be, on some level, at least in the quarterback position, a rebuilding process. I think you need to move on from Mitch Trubisky. If you want to give him one more year and roll the dice on the hopes that he can manage a game and maybe get you back to where you were last year at 12-4, I'm okay with it. But listen, as a Bears fan, if you're telling me there's a possibility of Tom Brady landing on Lakeshore Drive and the only thing that you have to do is get rid of Mitch Trubisky, yeah, let's go. He's the greatest quarterback of all time. I'm out of options. I'd much rather have Teddy Bridgewater, but if that's not an option, then yeah, I'll take Tom Brady.
Good Big Five on the way. We'll answer the question if Antonio Brown's next career should be rapper or boxer.
The crew over at Finley Toyota speak Spanish, Thai, and even Persian. In fact, they speak 14 different languages. Come in and talk the universal language of big savings today.